episode 26 of Consistently Above Average is here with you. Released in the middle of the night on Saturday the 8th of March, but recorded to you on Friday the 7th of March. Now, this is a very famous day for a variety of reasons, and I'm sorry you won't be able to celebrate some of them as you will not be listening to it on that date. It is the first date of the first non-stop flight from America to Asia back in 1929. Queen Elizabeth, how could we forget, back in 2019, posted her first ever Instagram post on this date as well. But most importantly, it is also National Cereal Day over in the United States. I celebrated by having a bowl of shredded wheat just before recording this. Was in a shop the other day, went to buy frosted shredded wheat. They didn't have any of them. They had apricot-filled shredded wheat. Terrible-sounding flavour. Blueberry-filled shredded wheat. Probably not the best flavour. I went for the bite-sized shredded wheat, the smaller version of it. And I will get some frosted shredded wheat at some point during the week when I get through this this box. Now, unfortunately, Americans can't really celebrate it as their versions of cereal would make most normal people go blind and lose their eyesight. So let them enjoy it however they want. But okay, I lied to you. I started this episode with a lie straight away. I said most importantly it was National Cereal Day. But I know you're all just sitting on the edge of the seat waiting, shouting even, saying, come on, man, just say it. We already know what it is, but we want you to say it. We want to hear you say it, Andrew. Okay, fair enough. March 7th, 1946, a lady named Anne Hodges holds a unique record. The only living person on living record to have ever been struck by a meteorite. On the 7th of March, 1946, the very first documented case of a human being struck by a meteorite occurred. The woman's name was Anne Hodges, and she lived in Sylacauga, Alabama, which already means she might be making this story up. But a meteorite weighing approximately 8.5 pounds crashed through the roof of her house, hitting her while she was napping on the couch. The rock caused a bruise on her side, but thankfully Anne survived the incident. This is the only confirmed case of a meteorite directly hitting a person. And to this day, she remains the only person in recorded history that has had that happen to them. And you will, of course, fans of Anne will know that we will be honouring her also on September 17th. That is her date of death. She passed away age 52 in 1972. Anyway, thanks very much for indulging me. That's the end of this episode, so tune back in next week. And we have a little bit of a quick jiu-jitsu discussion before we close off the episode. The meat and potatoes, I suppose you could say, of this week's episode. This question came up during the week at a class, and it did make me think. I sat on it a little bit. If it is better to learn and start jiu-jitsu in a beginner's class or a beginner's course, or if you drop into a mixed class and go from there, if beginners are allowed to start in those classes. Now, arguments to be made for both perspectives. I've seen people excel in both, so we're going to break it apart in a couple of elements. Maybe for the listeners that have picked up on this podcast recently, don't know a lot about jiu-jitsu, enjoy maybe finding out topics about the living recorded person that was struck by a meteorite, and now we'll get them in with that sort of information, but then hit them with a bit of jiu-jitsu content. Let's look at it from the perspective of starting a beginner's course or joining a beginner's class. All right. So my main thing is that when you start with a beginner's course, by and large, it's going to be 20 people or however many people that have signed up for it are all starting from ground zero. There's a lot to be said for no experience, a load of people just being there and learning from that point on. Now, if you have an understanding of your body, maybe you're used to throwing your weight around to a certain degree, coming over from another contact sport, have been in altercations throughout your life, you're going to find this sport in the form of jiu-jitsu a little bit easier than the other people who don't have that experience. If you're interested in trying jiu-jitsu and you're listening to this and you're already thinking, well, I haven't got that experience, don't worry. It's hard to figure out some of the coordination at the start, how you would move about the place, where you should put your body, how you should do this, how you should do that. Like, having not played rugby or something like that doesn't mean that you wouldn't be able to do jiu-jitsu. It just means that some things, rather than others, will come to some people quicker, more naturally. That's all. Why I feel the beginner course and class can actually cause a lesser retention in the longer run. So if we say 16 random individuals have seen an excellent graphic design on social media, or watched the video of a person with a microphone stitched to a t-shirt with the little blue lights and the Rode microphones, telling you about how this course is starting on this date, how there's limited places left, DM us to secure your place on this course now. 16, 18, 20, whatever people have read and responded to this call to action on social media, and they start off on their jiu-jitsu journey. Now, these 20 people are arriving in all different shapes and sizes with a variety of backgrounds, different life experiences. They're all starting, as I said, from a baseline, ground zero. Now, sometimes you're going to have someone who, okay, well, this is just like something that has happened, and I've heard about it plenty of times. You'll have people who are serial beginner course repeaters. Someone who just slipped through the net, stopped jiu-jitsu, done a bit of training before. They want to go back to the beginning to start it again. And I just want to get back into it. I don't really want to roll too much. Do you know, I don't want to get hurt. Like I wouldn't be, do you know, like just ease myself back in. Just get some drilling done, you know, just get some drilling. Now, in my head, to a degree, these people aren't going to last. All right. They've already quit once. They've already quit twice. They might have even quit in a third time, and they're coming back to just ease themselves back in. Do you know? What's happening there is that they already have a base of the fundamentals. They already know what jiu-jitsu is. They've rolled it already before, and they're nearly not prepared to take the bad rounds or the rolling that's going to happen them, that they feel is going to happen them on their first round or two back. So they would rather be the bigger fish in the smaller pond to start off with. All right. If you're listening to this and you're thinking about getting back into jiu-jitsu and you've done it before, don't be that guy. Your gym are happy to see you back. The members are happy to see you back. Go back to classes, go back to normal classes, train with people, do it that way. Don't put yourself ahead of the pack that's starting a beginner's course. That's not the goal here. So if we take that person out of the equation, all of these people are starting with zero experience and they're all learning the same curriculum. Now, assuming that there is sparring and rolling or training with resistance throughout this beginner course, it's absolutely obvious, like 100% fact, that some person or some people with a natural athletic advantage are going to get the better of the people on the course that don't have the natural athletic advantage. That is assuming, again, that they've all started from ground zero with no prior experience. The 70 kilo GAA athlete, when it comes to live sparring, is going to get the better of the 70 kilo individual that has not got that athletic and sporting background. Okay. Now, what can happen to some people here, excuse the expression, they don't see the wood from the trees, and they might become discouraged with the progress, feeling like they're being beat up, feeling like they're losing, feeling like they're being dominated. This light bulb eureka moment of people realizing that they like jiu-jitsu and they want to keep doing it doesn't always happen for somebody when they're in a beginner's course. Doesn't always happen for somebody very early on. And from an ego perspective, or from a just why am I going to bother doing this if I keep getting beaten up perspective, it can be a hard thing to take for somebody feeling like they're losing consistently when in theory everyone's meant to be a beginner. Everyone's meant to be starting the same. Well, if he's doing this, why can't I do this? Okay. And they may not continue with the course, or they don't continue with the sport, and they don't join the gym and different stuff like that. Now, here's the benefit of the person who was ahead of the other person. I think some of these people can go into the mixed classes or classes on a timetable that they're able to jump into. From our perspective in Dundalk, I know that there's a beginner's class that runs in a curriculum, say, every 16 to 24 weeks anyway. So a person coming in may be able to just take to that pretty easily, depending on what's being taught at that point in the curriculum anyway. They might be able to hold their own to a degree when it comes to some of the sparring. They might enjoy a bit of a fight or a tussle, and they're happy to learn it like that. So the learning needs of everybody doing jiu-jitsu is going to be different depending on the person or the type of person that they are. I've had plenty of people through the 7 a.m. classes in Uri. I've had a handful in particular that I can think of that have learnt the majority, if not all, of their jiu-jitsu through these 7 a.m. classes. Mornings are the only time that they can train. It suits them. They're happy to train twice a week. They're around people of different levels, a handful of other white belts, and mainly upper belts, blue, purple, brown, whatever. Now, this is actually, just as a side note, I think this is where the job of a higher rank belt can come into play quite effectively. Within an ecosystem of a Brazilian jiu-jitsu gym, and more often than not, these higher belts do these jobs without realizing that they're doing them. And a lot of the time, from people that I've chatted, you nearly do it subconsciously as a way of extending an arm or a hand to someone who's trying to get to grips with the sport. And you would want them to enjoy it the same way that you do. So you want them to get the best of the experience so that they're more likely to stay, so that they get that light bulb or eureka moment that makes them think, yeah, this is the thing that I want to do for the next little while. Now, you do hear and read, and people might talk about jokes or memes and stuff about, oh, you don't want to be the guy on the mat who's correcting another beginner's technique. You don't want to be the guy who's coaching. What you don't want to be is a higher belt who's coaching a lower belt through the submission, like to not get caught in a roll. That's one of the worst things. But I really think that's an American thing. I think that is very much a stereotypical American Reddit thread thing. I'm not aware of too much of that sort of stuff that I've seen in Ireland. So, fingers crossed, touch wood, hopefully it doesn't happen. But these people who are like correcting another beginner's technique and stuff, or trying to show someone the ropes. I'm going to have to Google this actually. You will show Yope the ropes. Was that from Recess? Remember the show Recess? TJ Detweiler and the gang, Recess. Yope, you'll show Yope the ropes. Yeah. Recess. Yope from Norway. Y-O-P-E. I'm going to play this out loud. Hopefully you can hear it on my new microphone and mixer. No. Oh yeah, he looked identical to your man. What was his name? Gus? Gus Griswold. Here comes Yope.
Hey, Gus, looking sporty. What's with the cap?
Well, I was thinking.
Okay, never mind. This is the magic of live podcasting. I can't believe that you've just had to sit between those last couple of minutes there. Anyway, you'll show Yope the rope. These people have a genuine intention, all right, of wanting like to get that person to stick at it. They're not doing it from a thinking that, oh, well, I should be teaching the class instead. Their intention might be a little bit off, but it's still in very good nature. Okay, they're not meaning any harm by it. So to the person who's starting the sport, but going into a mixed class, maybe with like a friend or someone to try it out, I think these people are going to get more benefit than doing a beginner's course, because the environment and other bodies that they're learning from, and it's not just the blind leading the blind, but the problem that this can have, the downside is like, if I'm like week 3 out of 5 teaching Spider Guard or Lasso or De La Hiva, and that's when newer but more maybe athletically based people arrive in, that person may end up not taking to the sport at all and not sticking to it because they're being just dumped in the middle of something, but they're being asked to learn something a little bit more advanced above what their level would be at for just having started out. So now, don't get me wrong, American Reddit BJJ user hat on again. In the eyes of this American business or gym owner, the direct debit chaser, they're going to see every new person as a potential 10-year investment, sign this contract, cancellation fee included, buy the merch, buy the gi, buy the whatever. Like, they're going to see you as an investment in some capacity. So they're going to want that person to fit in and enjoy it and not turn away business. It'll be up to them, of course, of making the decision if they're going to stick with it. But if you can convince someone to sign a fairly prohibitive contract that you know there's a cancellation fee and different stuff like that, they're probably going to stick with it anyway, slightly longer than normal, than if they thought they could just walk away and no hassle. And there are like, there are so many variables on this. I think a beginner's course where you are maybe limiting sparring can also be a good thing. But then the opposite side of that is that sparring and rolling is the thing that convinces so many people to keep doing it. And that's the thing that we really want to be doing. I think it can depend on your body type, your background, your sport, your whatever. You could jump into mixed classes and be fine. My number one goalless rule, highest tier rule, is to try and find somebody to start it with you. That is the thing that keeps and saves so many people. It doesn't matter if the other person is going to stick at it longer term. There's a good chance one of you will. So joining with somebody and having a friend there that you can be the one to train with, to drill with, to be practicing with, to be chatting with, to be talking about it afterwards, X, Y, and Z. That's the most crucial thing. Regardless, try it anyway, but definitely just as a base level, anyone might be listening to this, get in a beginner's course if you're wanting to start it, or a beginner's class that runs year round. You're never going to be in a perfect position to start this whole, or well, when I lose a bit of weight or when I get a little bit fitter and blah, 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 blah. Those things are cop-outs. They're excuses. By starting, you will get fitter. By starting, you may even lose a bit of weight. These things are the things that matter. Just get in, jump straight into it. And not the most exciting jiu-jitsu based topic, I have to admit. But as I said on last week's podcast, we have, hopefully you can hear a difference. Hopefully it sounds better. I have the ability to play sounds and noises that I can cue up into a little keypad here. I can also play stuff from my phone, play stuff from other sources. It's quite interesting. But we also have a little bit of a visual setup going on here as well. Now, the full episode is not going to be recorded as a video. Well, the full episode is recorded as a video, but I won't be releasing it in a full capacity. It will just be for like social media reels and stuff like that. Now, slightly more importantly, we have to discuss some sauna etiquette. Now, where do you even start? When you begin to talk about saunas, you need to think about mentioning some of the great sauna players in history, all right? Only four nations have ever produced athletes that have won the sauna world championships. That includes Finland, Belarus, Russia, and Germany, right? Now, link that to jiu-jitsu. Oh, look at me. I'm Rodolfo Vieira. I'm one of the best in history. Roger Gracie this, Marcus Pichetta that. Grow up, right? Grow up. Don't even come at me with this stuff, right? Between the years of the year 2000 to 2007, two men traded titles back and forth. That would be Leo Pusa and the great Timo Kukkonen. That's Leo Pusa and Timo Kukkonen. But who am I talking to? You guys have already heard about them. And by the time it was all said and done in the 10-year period, Timo had won 5 world titles. Leo had 4. But before we get into the stories, before we get into the backstories, let's go over the rules of competitive saunas. The starting temperature is 110 degrees Celsius. Half a litre of water will be poured onto the stove every 30 seconds. The use of alcohol is prohibited prior to and during the competition. Competitors must wash themselves beforehand and remove any creams and lotions. Competitors must sit erect, their buttocks and thighs on the bench. Ordinary swimsuits must be used. Pant legs in the men's swimsuits may be up to 20 centimetres long, and women's shoulder straps may be up to 5 centimetres wide. This sounds worse than the IBJJF gi uniform requirements, but let's keep going. Hair that reaches the shoulders must be tied into a ponytail. Touching the skin and brushing is prohibited. Competitors must not disturb each other. At the request of the judges, competitors must show that they are in their senses with a thumbs up. Competitors must be able to leave the sauna unaided to qualify as the winner or for the next round. A breach of the rules results in a warning. Another one results in disqualification. And the last person leaving the sauna unaided is the winner. Now, the World Sauna Championships were ended in 2010 after a death of a competitor. Now, his autopsy did conclude, and the police did not press charges against the organisers, that he had died of third-degree burns, but his death was aided by the use of strong painkillers he took before the tournament and a local anaesthetic grease that was applied to his skin before the finals. Neither of the last, now I know you're not meant to speak ill of the dead, but that's poor sportsmanship. We'll call a spade. Now, neither of the last two competitors of the 2010 edition were able to leave the sauna unaided. So the winner actually went to the person who came in third. And also, just on a note of that, the women's division was dominated by Finnish people. The three-time winner was Belarusian as well, at some point in the mid-2000s. So, you know, this is a serious, serious business. The previous five-time champion, who was going for his sixth world title, Timo Kukkonen, he was placed into a medically induced coma after not being able to leave the sauna unaided. Woke up 6 weeks later, respiratory system completely torn to shreds, 70% of his body covered in third-degree burns. One of his tactics for that event was to grow his hair just long enough so that it would cover his ears, so his ears wouldn't burn as easy. The reason we're talking about this, sauna has come up in conversation during the week because the leisure centre in Newry is reopening, which means the local tournaments will be restarting next week. This leisure centre, sauna, swimming pool, steam room has been closed for over a year, and I have to say I've missed it very much. I've missed my regular sauna and steam room sessions in there. I have been going to a great place out in Carlingford, Hotbox Sauna, loads of locations around Leinster. I have no discount code or anything of the sort to give you. You'll pay full price like the rest of us, and it's a great spot. Now, I've been going once a week for the last while. It's attached to the sea, which is great if you're there when the tide is in. Temperatures can reach up to 120 degrees Fahrenheit in the Hotbox saunas in Carlingford, much hotter than you'd get in your industrial leisure centre sauna. But I put the question out to the listener base during the week of what are some of the sauna etiquettes that they follow when partaking in sauna use. Now, this was based off a 10-minute tale told to me by Damien Rooney, aka at Right Fitness, about a competition that he got in a sauna with a 55-year-old woman who told them beforehand, no one is to sit on the top seat except me. That's basically the equivalent of this woman spitting in Damien's face. That's how he took it. So he marched straight for the top, sat there. She tried to ask him to move. He said, I'm fine, thanks. And he won at a cost to his health. But he outlasted the sauna instructor. And what a win that was. He ruined a weekend away with his partner, but he won. And that's all that matters. If you know Damien, he will, no problem, happily tell you that story. Now, some of the responses that we got in, okay? Eye contact protocol, please discuss. This is something that actually came up a few times. I can only assume it came up by people who do not use saunas regularly. Listen to this codswallop. This came in, right? Max eye contact at all times with the biggest lad in there until he gets out. Winner stays on. He's getting out of the sauna because some lunatic has been staring at him uncomfortably for the last few minutes. that's how, like, look, I suppose you got him out of there. That's all that matters. You have to get them out of there. But that's why he left. Someone else here, I can see it, also encouraging a protein shake beforehand. So if you were to fart, it would clear the sauna. Underhand tactics. This is the Eddie Guerrero of sauna users, obviously sending in this question. And I can only come to the conclusion that either the listener base of this podcast are full of degenerates or do not use saunas regularly. There was some proper answers though. Look straight ahead, no eye contact, and never blow your nose on the floor. There are three rules. I'd hang my tie on those three rules. You could nail those three rules to the wall. I'd be 100% with them. Look straight ahead, no eye contact, never blow your nose on the floor. Love that. Another person asking if flip-flops are allowed or encouraged. I'm going to say flip-flops are not a bad shout for communal saunas and steam rooms, like tiled floor ones where you might question how often they're cleaned on the inside or if they're just turned off and left like that. Definitely in favor of it then. Don't pick up any verrucas or anything like that. But for a good private company, wood-fired saunas, you know that they're cleaned at the end of every day, I'd be fine with the barefoot approach. And the one out the road actually does say don't wear flip-flops into it. So maybe they don't want the plastic melting or whatever like that. So for what it's worth though, here are my unofficial rules of competing in the sauna. Now, if you've made up your mind that you want the top shelf, and the top shelf fits four people, but there's three on it, I'll admit, and the rest of the sauna's free, I'm not squeezing up onto that top bench. I admire you if you squeeze up onto that top bench. I'm going to take the second shelf and then take a top seat when one of them becomes available. But huge respect to those who would bull on ignorantly and decide, yeah, this can fit four people, therefore I am the fourth. I'm going to sit here. Move over, please. You don't need to be sitting with your legs so wide. That's a strong show of intent, and that you're not here to take part. You're here to actually go for the win. All right. Now, next, in my opinion, minimum 10 minutes. Have to stay for 10 minutes. If you're going to concede ground to those that are already in there and leave before them, you have to at least give it 10 minutes. All right. Otherwise, the aim of this game is to outlast every other person who is in the sauna from the second you walk in. If there are 12 people in there when you walk in, well, I'm sorry, 12 people are going to have to leave before you leave. All right? That's just how it is. In very rare circumstances, this is a double XP win. If a person leaves the sauna for a cold shower or a cold plunge and comes back in within a minute or two, the rookie mistake of not allowing themselves to dry and cool off a little bit naturally before going back in, they're going to cook. They're going to cook as soon as they get back in there. If they come back in within the 2 minutes, if you outlast them again, which is possible, don't beat yourself before it starts. You can beat them. They should be forced to probably not come back for a month. Okay? You did them in. You did them dirty. That was brilliant, right? Now, here's where it gets a little bit more exciting. Have you got a friend who's there with you? Are you going to the sauna with someone? This is where the mind games can really start to take shape. You might notice one of the other competitors are struggling when you're in the sauna. This is when you start talking to your mate. Not as hot as it usually is today, is it? It's taken a while to heat up in here today. That other place we went to was much worse. This is handy. This is easy. I'd say I could last 20 minutes in here. Or you've already been in there for a while, person struggling. How long are we in here now? Probably 20 minutes. Oh, that last one, that'll break them, right? Now, here's where you have to be careful. Too much talking will fatigue you out quicker. So it's not ideal. We are there to cook and to compete, not to yap. But the mental mind games and the verbal mind games, they can take shape as well. A physical mind game. How might you ask? What is a physical mind game in a sauna? Well, water. That's what it is, right? I have a nice steel bottle. Fight aesthetic steel bottle. Keeps my juice cool. Generally, I like to bring in lemon flavored my wadi. But I'll bring it in occasionally. More often than not, I've been leaving it outside in Carlingford. That's grand. But when I was competing in the leisure centre, I would routinely bring in a 1.5 litre bottle of Evian. And this is where the real mind games would start to come into play. All right. You would see people clutching a little pathetic 500 milliliter bottle of water, right? Plastic. Running out of water at an alarming pace while you still have the big girl, the big 1.5 Evian. She's sitting here beside you, full to the brim, haven't even touched, right? See, when you see somebody struggling with the end of their water and they're like literally like only getting droplets and they're just, they constantly keep bringing it back up to their mouth. What you need to do is pick up Miss Evian. You need to douse yourself in the water. Over your head, down the back of your neck, cool down. Like, even though this is going to work against you, it's going to heat you up quicker. You need to let them know that you are so unbothered by this water. You are using it to pour it over your head instead of into your mouth. Okay? It doesn't matter if you need a drink. They need it more. And you are willing to show them that you are prepared to waste the water, that you don't need it. That is going to send that person out of the sauna ASAP, right? The visual aid, the torturous effect of somebody pouring water or wasting it when they're turning into SpongeBob SquarePants next to you, just all shriveled up, that's the move, right? Take a big, huge gulp as well afterwards. Big, huge gulp afterwards. That's fine. But the real move, trust me on this, the real move is wasting the water in front of them. I look forward to the podcast in 3 or 4 weeks' time after the leisure centre has reopened, where I can tell you all that I have been banned from the leisure centre because this information has gotten out. But I'll leave you with that for now. I'm heading to Newground tomorrow. There's a bit of a training session on. They have a winter camp on with a variety of seminars and stuff like that. I'm going to go get lamped about the place tomorrow morning. Then on to an MMA show in Belfast that evening. A couple of people from Team Tara is fighting at that show, which means I have plenty of hours to kill in Belfast tomorrow. I'm going to go for coffee and then I'm going for a bugir with my sworn enemy and best friend, Paul McCourt. Great man. We're going to go to Bunsen. And then I'll be going to the Devonish afterwards. So we'll touch base next week as we get closer towards the leisure centre reopening time and closer, even closer, a step closer every day towards the greatest holidays in the calendar year, which is St. Patrick's Day. All right. Have a good week. We'll touch base during the week. We'll chat next week. Good luck. Episode 26 in the books.